Good afternoon, you are tuned to KTRO News in Juneau. And for Wednesday, January 3rd, 2008, edition, 18th edition of Juneau Afternoon. Today on the show, we'll learn about the Hurlock property sale. Jeffrey Smith from the Learning Connection will be here to talk about New Year's resolutions. We'll talk about this month's Wildlife Wednesday presentation on protecting bears with guest Jim Adams. And we'll get an update on Eaglecrest activities. That, burn out, music and more today on the Juneau Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight looks like rain, possibly heavy at times tomorrow. Forecast for Friday, more rain. Saturday, about a 50% chance of snow.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The British Columbia Supreme Court has upheld a Native man's right to hunt in Canada, the CBC reports. Washington State resident Rick Desentel was charged with violations for killing an elk in British Columbia in 2010. He's Sinaiks, whose ancestors relocated to Washington. He was acquitted of charges, but the provincial government appealed, claiming he's not Aboriginal from Canada because the First Nation was declared extinct. Arguments were made that the tribe traditionally lived on both sides of the border and has connections in Canada. Last week, a judge upheld his right to hunt, saying his ancestors traditionally hunted in the country. A Cherokee Nation tribal councilman, who's the director of Indian education for Muskogee Public Schools in Oklahoma, is on paid administrative leave. Television News 2 reported last week, descendants of Cherokee freedmen called for the resignation of David Walking Stick in December. The group petitioned after Walking Stick introduced legislation in the Cherokee Nation for the tribe to appeal a court ruling allowing descendants of freedmen to become Cherokee citizens. Last fall, a federal judge found the freedmen, black slaves who were held by tribal members more than a century ago, were entitled to citizenship. The group claims his political position is in conflict with the interests of heading the district's Indian Education Department. The councilman told the news station last month the issue was not about race, but sovereignty. The school board reportedly could consider his position in the department. The Pokagon Band of Potawatomi Indians is set to open a casino in Indiana this month. Located on trust land in northern Indiana, it will be the first casino in the state owned and operated by a Native American tribe. The tribe, which is headquartered in Michigan, currently operates casinos in that state. The Indiana Gaming Facility is 175,000 square feet. It includes games, restaurants, bars, and a retail store. The tribe says it will employ about 1,200 people. The public opening is scheduled for January 16th. Nearly every piece of tribal land on the northern plains has gone through dangerous cold over the past week or so. Many areas will get a brief break, but as South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports, more cold conditions are on the way.
Winter high-pressure systems are known for very cold conditions. The pressure removes clouds from the skies, those clouds holding the day's heat until they disappear. Some cities broke nearly century-old low-temperature records over New Year's weekend. Renee Wise with the National Weather Service in Aberdeen, South Dakota, says the plains will receive a short break, but more cold is waiting to pour in from Canada.
The overnight lows will not be as cold as we've seen this past holiday week, no. But we'll be back into the single digits below zero for overnight lows. Still above zero, though, at this time for daytime highs. So not quite up to what is considered average for this time of year, but warmer than we've seen this past week.
An official with the South Dakota Department of Social Services says heating assistance is still available. Funds are available for low-income residents to help pay fuel bills or for furnace repairs. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
The U.S. Justice Department has announced grant opportunities for tribes. 2018 tribal solicitations are now posted on the Justice Department's website. Funding can go to enhancing law enforcement, bolstering justice systems, and supporting crime prevention efforts. The competitive grants involve public safety, substance abuse, violence against women, youth programs, wellness courts, and other justice-related issues. The deadline to apply for funding is in mid-March. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, promoting obesity prevention, improved nutrition, and physical activity. More at hanc.aaip.org. Support for Kwanic Broadcast Corporation comes from the Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More info can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
It's about 6 minutes. That's the radio. Tune in afternoon. First guest in the studio are Greg Cheney and Dan Blaydor about CBJ lands and the piece of land in particular. That's the Herlock property. Thank you for coming down to the station today.
Hello. Yeah, it's great to be here, Jeff. And we're here to talk about a rather unique opportunity for the community. It's called the Herlock property because it's on Herlock Avenue, but it was the former Juno Youth Services Cornerstone campus. And it was used for providing services to youth. The Juno Youth Services is moving their location to the Back Loop Road, and they are returning this property to the city of Juno. And right now we're looking for proposals for how it can be used.
Where is Herlock Avenue?
Herlock Avenue is located in the Mendenhall Valley, and this property specifically is adjacent to the Reniger Skate Park on the corner of Mendenhall Loop Road and Herlock Avenue.
How big is it?
The property is about 36,000 square feet, and then with the main building and three additional buildings, the square footage of the property is about 6,400 square feet. So it's rather large.
Yeah, it's a big place. The property itself is big, but the building, the main building, is a pretty big facility. We were trying to figure out how many bedrooms because of the way it's broken up, some of them are being used for offices. But I would say it probably has about 10 bedrooms, a main living facility or a recreational facility, kitchen, bathrooms, and then the outbuildings include a big classroom. The classroom is actually a portable classroom from one of the school district's campuses, so you get an idea how big that would be. And then a building for storage, laundry. And then they have an outbuilding that's mostly for maintenance of the facility.
And right now, they rent it for $1 a year.
Originally, Juno Youth Services have been using this property for about 40 years. And since they were providing a service that the community found beneficial, the assembly had agreed to lease the property to them for $1 a year. So that's what's been going on for 40 years. It's been a great partnership. But they paid for all the maintenance, they paid for all the utilities, we just provided the property. And so now with them moving out of the site, we have an opportunity for a local service organization to come into the site and maybe take it over, maybe on a similar term. But we also have the opportunity just to sell it for fair market value. So we're collecting proposals. And so if you are a service organization, this is potentially a great opportunity. But also, if you are a private sector person and might want to look at something like a bed and breakfast, there's an opportunity to make a proposal as well.
And if you do have interest in this property, the city is going to be hosting an open house on Monday, January 8th from noon to 6 p.m. And so we'll be there and we'll have the facility available for people to walk through and see and get a feel for it. The lot's rather large and has space for parking of about 20 vehicles as well.
That sounds like a unique piece of property.
It's very unique since it's quite walkable. I mean, they have a beautiful path from this property to McDonald's, for example, or the Breeze Inn. But just across Egan is Super Bear and that entire shopping center. So It's next to the bus stop, so it's very walkable as well as being in the middle of the Mendenhall Valley. So it's kind of central in the community in that way, so that's really nice. And I should say that we're collecting proposals, and this is a very formal process. The applications must be received by January 16th, so that's about a week after our open house, at 2 p.m., and there's a $500 fee for applying. So we're looking for serious proposals, and you need to submit your application to the CBJ Purchasing Division, which is above Capital Copy. Call us if you have any questions about where that is. And it's, like I said, 2 p.m. on January 16th, which is Tuesday. So,
have you got any interest already?
We've received a number of phone calls and emails of parties that are looking for further information, and hopefully we'll find out more on Monday when we have the open house. I think we'll have some people stop by, and once they see the site and get a better feel for it, I think we'll have some serious interest.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention the organization that receives this property is going to be decided by the assembly, and the first review will be by staff. We're going to look at all of the applications. We're going to kind of give them relative rankings. And then we're going to present them to the Lands Committee, which is a committee of the Assembly, on January 29th. And that's at 5 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. So that'll just be it's a working committee. They will make a recommendation, hopefully, to the full Assembly. And we're not sure when the Assembly would take that up, but we assume it'll be probably in February. And so the thing for organizations to look at is what are the Assembly's goals for the community? If you're proposing to buy it for less than fair market value, they're going to be looking for something that gives, achieves a goal that the community has identified and the Assembly has identified. One example is child care or elder care. In this case, they had a place for youth that were having difficulties. So, you know, some kind of a service would be looked on favorably. If you just wanted to run it for as a private business, they would probably be interested in a fair market value sale. We don't know who's going to apply. There's a lot of reasons not to apply because this is a rather large building. It was built in the 60s, so it's not brand new. And organizations coming into it are probably going to need some capital to do some customization. I mean, it works right now as what it was being used for, but you know, there might be needs for upgrades or that sort of thing.
I'm thinking assisted living.
Yeah, assisted living would be a classic example of a community need that would be looked on favorably. But we're also, as a community, very interested in making sure that the organization that takes over is experienced and knows what they're getting into. There's, building maintenance is an issue that costs, you know, several thousand dollars a month. Just a large facility like this is kind of expensive and has an ongoing need. There's the utilities that you have to take care of, as well as running a program. So a building is only a piece of a very large puzzle. So one of the things that we're going to be looking at is the program and the experience of the people that are making the proposal.
And this isn't the way you normally get rid of surplus property.
It's a little unusual, but this property is very unique. And I think the thing that we are all trying to keep in mind is Juno Youth Services has had a great partnership with the city for 40 years. We certainly are sad to see it go, but, you know, in an ideal world, we'd have another organization come in and provide a community service in the same manner. That's just a win-win for everybody. But I'm not sure if that's not out there. You know, some community service organizations aren't going to need a building like this. We may not get any applications. We just don't know yet.
The Assembly Lands Committee has directed us to search for applicants and look for people who could provide these services with this property prior to going the route of disposing of it to a private entity.
Yeah, so we're out here. We're on the radio. Thank you very much for letting us come in and talk. And I want to really emphasize all this information is on our website, the City of Juneau's website. You go to that, then go to the lands page, and then within the lands page, there's a little icon, a little for sale sign with land, and you click on that icon, and it'll take you to the lands property page, and right in there, you can find the information. There's quite a bit in there. There's the application forms, as well as information about the properties, a few photographs, and a little bit of history about the property. So it also has our contact information. which we should probably give you now anyway. If you want to, you can send an email to us, which is the lands office, which is lands_office@juno.org. And also, you can call us at 586-0224. That's 586-0224. And ask questions, especially if you're having trouble with the website. I know that it's easy to say it's on the web, and then sometimes you go there and you can't make it. Call us up. We'll walk you through it. We're really interested in talking to people. And if you want to drop by your office, we're always happy to talk as well.
And come by the open house on Monday, January 8th, from noon to 6 p.m. We'll be there. We'll be able to answer some questions. We should have some paperwork available. And we really look forward to talking to people about this property. It's exciting to think about what opportunities people could come up with and ideas they have to utilize this property for a public purpose.
Yeah, I think the open house is really going to be helpful for people because when you just look at a floor plan or hear a description, it doesn't really give you the feel for what the building is. It's a great opportunity, but you know, I want people to be realistic because it's a little bit of an older facility. So Juno Youth Services has done a great job of keeping it up. They put a lot of grant money into maintaining and upgrading and remodeling. But any organization that walks in there is going to have their own ideas and is going to need to look at it realistically to make sure it's a good fit for their organization.
Once again, the date of the open house
is Monday, January 8th, and that's from 12 in the afternoon to 6 p.m.
Yeah, anyone can come by and take a look. We're particularly interested in people that might be interested in the property, but it's an open house for the community if people are interested in looking, and we'll be there to answer what questions we have and give people a little bit of background about this location.
How much land do you have that you might be looking to get rid of in the future?
Well, we're doing a land sale right now, and I think it might be worth bringing up. This is a completely different subject in that we're talking about selling property for fair market value to people to, use it like they would for private property.
For residential.
Yeah, residential uses. So we have two different areas. You want to explain that?
Sure, yeah. And this is about to start. It hasn't started yet, but I believe it's going to start in the next couple of days. So we have two locations of property. One of them is the Renegar subdivision, which was recently developed by the City and Borough of Juneau. And there's two lots there, and they're rather large lots, and they're D18, I believe.
D15,
sorry.
15 units allowed per acre. So they're multifamily, and they're across from the Zontakahini Middle School, to give you an idea where they are. And those properties, both one is 3.5 acres, the other is 4 acres, so they're larger lots, mostly intended for some kind of a multifamily development, condominium or apartment-type style. But if you would prefer, someone could build several individual houses, or we always think, we kind of joke about the millionaire that would come in and build a big mansion. You could have a single-family dwelling on a lot like that if you wanted. So we're looking for a sealed competitive bid, so the highest bid will get those properties.
And the second location that we're selling a lot on is at the Lena subdivision, the South Lena subdivision, and we have a single lot out there that we're putting up for sealed competitive bid as well. So the way that process works for those three lots is we'll be accepting bids through sealed competitive bid process. So if you're interested in the lot, you can apply to purchase it and submit a bid. And then once the bid period ends, we'll open all the bids and the highest bidder gets it. And so city financing is available for those as well. And if there are any questions regarding that land sale, please contact our office as well, 586-5252.
Sounds pretty exciting, no matter which way you look at it.
Yeah, and the thing about city financing that's nice is you can put 10% down, so you don't need to have all the money up front, but you still obviously have to make payments. But it allows for people that don't have all the money available up front to get into some property, and once you buy it, you can make payments to the city. If you want to pay it off later, you can in a big chunk. There's no penalty for early payment or anything like that. So it's a good opportunity, and I'm hoping that somebody will look at those larger lots and have some innovative ideas or provide more housing, because that's really what we're trying to do. Yeah.
All right, Dan, Greg, thank you for coming by today.
All right, thank you, and we
really
appreciate
it.
And I shouldn't let you get out of here without talking about what film project you're working on.
Okay, thank you. All right, talk to you later.
Okay, thanks for coming by.
This is Bird Note. We think we know robins pretty well. Red-breasted birds of spring that tug earthworms from the ground. Perhaps less well-known is that, in winter, flocks of American robins spend the night together. Usually, a few dozen to a few hundred birds roost communally in trees or an old barn, or under a bridge. Larger robin roosts can number in the thousands, or even tens of thousands of birds. A remarkable number. Until we consider the scene near St. Petersburg, Florida, during the winter of 2007. Observers here counted robins arriving in late afternoon to roost on an island of dense mangrove trees. For 2.5 hours, the stunned census takers watched a steady stream of robins flying overhead. Based on the rate of birds passing by per second, a conservative estimate was 720,000 robins. If the average robin weighs 2.7 ounces, that was nearly 61 tons of robins. The previous year, the same roost hosted a mere 42,000 robins. In 2007, it was likely snow and ice to the north and west that pushed these legions of robins to Florida. And we thought we knew robins. You can share this show with a friend when you come to birdnote.org.
Our next guest is Jeff Smith from the Learning Center. Jeff, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
So, what is the Learning Center? Where is it?
So, we are downtown at 210 Ferry Way. And basically what the Learning Connection does is workforce development. So maybe that's education related, helping people get their GED or improve their English skills or get ready for college. Or it could be actual prep programs like construction training or helping somebody get an internship with a, you know, youth worker program or an older workers program. So a lot of different services that we provide, all at a free cost. So it's a really great place for people who are looking to improve and get started on their New Year's resolutions.
So it's not just computer classes.
No, yeah. There's also, you know, like I said, the GED, English as a second language, and there are still free computer and job search help for every Tuesday and Thursday from 9:30 to 11. We're going to be reopening on Monday, January 8th, and we will also have new hours. So if you work during the day and you're looking to get your GED or improve your education, we're going to now be open till 6:30 instead of just till 4:30. So you can come after work and get ready to knock out your GED or improve your educational skills.
And also get make good on your New Year's resolution.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe that's part of your resolution to go back to school and you're worried about your math or you're worried about your writing. We're the place to go and get that help for free before you go back to college.
Sounds great. I'm not sure if I have anything more. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think that everybody should know about this event that we have coming up, which is on Wednesday, January 17th. It's a New Year, New You event, so it's a celebration for the new year, and it's an open house so that people can learn about our services a little bit more and meet our staff and kind of see what we're all about. As part of this celebration, we're going to have food and refreshments. You know, anyone in the community can attend. So if you're just somebody who's interested to learn more about what we do because you might want to access the services, it's for you. But maybe you're thinking about volunteering and you just want to know what programs we have and how you might be able to get involved. It would be a good event for you as well. So that's on January 17th from 5 o'clock till 7 o'clock. Again, food and refreshments. It's going to be downtown at our Learning Center, 210 Ferry Way. And so you can get information, you can register for classes or for an orientation, you can meet the staff, and you'll also have a chance to win some great prizes. You know, it's going to be a fun event, interactive, and you'll have a chance to win some prizes. We were lucky enough to have some really generous donations from community organizations. Shout out to Eagle Crest, who donated 2 Learn to Ski packages. So you'll get a lift ticket, you'll get a lesson, you'll get a rental. You and a friend can go. So that'll be something that we offer out. Pavitz was generous and donated a 1-month membership. So if part of your New Year's resolution is to get fit, you can go on over to Pavitz if you win that prize. We also have prizes that we are giving away, free GED testing, a scholarship to our AK Drive program, which is a driver's ed program. Capital City Barbershop was nice enough to donate a couple of haircuts. So if you want to get fresh for your next interview, there would be a great opportunity if you win a prize through them. And Juneau Parks and Rec has donated 10 passes to the city pool or to Treadwell Arena. So maybe you want to try something new to stay active this new year. And so we're going to have a lot of different prizes, a lot of fun, and give you information about the services that we provide all at the same time. And so, again, that's on Wednesday, January 17th from 5 to 7 p.m. You can find that event on Facebook and confirm that you're going to come, or you can email us at learn@cerc.org.
What are some of the computer classes that you offer?
So right now, for computers, we have every Tuesday and Thursday, people can drop in. So as opposed to when we used to have the organized classes, we're doing more of a drop-in style now where people can come in and they say, you know, I really don't know how to use this new iPad that I got for Christmas. Could you show me how to do it? Or, you know, I'm trying to work on my resume and I don't know how to do it. I'm trying to brush up on Microsoft Word because I got this new job and I'm not really sure how to do it. You know, anything that you might have an issue with related to technology or computers, you can come in and drop in every Tuesday and Thursday from 9:30 to 11 and get that help. And it, like I said, it could be a software program, it could be a new device that you're working with, or maybe it's because you're trying to navigate the computer to find a new job, but you don't feel comfortable using the state job search system or just building your own resume. So you can come in, get that free help every Tuesday, Thursday from 9:30 to 11.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, just that if you want more information, you can go to our website at tlcalaska.org. You can call us at 586-5718, email learn@cerc.org, or you can find us on Facebook.
Jeffrey Smith from the Learning Connection. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me. We'll be right back.
it's not too late to download our Midnight Oil podcast. Alaska's Energy Desk traces the history of oil in Alaska and takes a peek into the future.
We have to decide what the narrative is, right? Are we all sort of watching Rome burn, or are we on the cusp of some sort of amazing transformation?
Visit KTOO.org or subscribe to Midnight Oil wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
as a group, Babies with Axes, featuring our own local Katie Henry. In studio now is with Jim Adams and Patricia Weary, talking about tonight's Wildlife Wednesday presentation. Patricia, you want to go give us a message, please?
Thank you. Thank you. The big thing for people to be aware of is that these last three events that we're doing tonight and in February and March are going to be at a different location. We're meeting at the University of Alaska in the Egan Lecture Hall. And we'll even wait for you tonight, 15 minutes longer than the 7. We'll start at a quarter after 7 so that you have time to see our signs and get your little bodies out to the university, because this is a very interesting talk we're having. It's a pleasure to have this gentleman come in from Anchorage.
Jim, you're with the National Parks Conservation Association.
That's right. I'm the Alaska Regional Director based in Anchorage.
What do you do?
Well, the National Parks Conservation Association is a nonprofit advocacy group. We were founded 3 years after the National Park Service was born by the founder of the National Park Service to protect national parks and also to try to convince Congress to keep funding them.
What do you do as far as bears go?
So in Alaska, we have advocated for the National Park Service to take protective actions to protect bears on the national preserves. The national preserves are managed by the national park system. They're just like national parks, with one really complicated exception, which is that hunting is allowed. And that means that the state of Alaska manages hunting on national preserves. And that means, in turn, that the state has been practicing intensive management on the national preserves. National Parks Conservation Association has long argued that that is not the right way to run national parklands. And so we're going to talk tonight about what the national parks mandate is, what the state's management mandate is, how they clash. A couple of years ago, the Park Service passed a big set of regulations that really made the state mad. We'll talk about those regulations, the response to them, and then I'll tell you what I think we ought to be doing to all get along.
What kind of bears are we talking about?
Brown bears, I think, I'll mostly focus on today, although we could talk about black bears, wolves, and other things. But brown bears are a good example.
How many bears are out there?
Well, there's about 22 million acres of bears. That's the answer I can give.
Good.
Yeah. What's your biggest challenge?
Well, the state and the National Park Service come from very different places when you talk about the management of wildlife. They have different objectives. They have different goals. And so the question is, can we in some way get along to make sure that both are to some extent meeting their objectives, or is this a terrible fight to the death?
I was hoping it involved death.
Well, okay. I'm hopeful that it will not.
Tell me more things about bears that people wouldn't realize.
Well, we know that in the past 20 or 25 years, the state has really emphasized providing caribou and moose for hunter demand. And to do that, they have increased hunting season limits, and they've increased bag limits and reduced tag fees for brown bears in a lot of places in the state, including a lot of the national preserves. So the take of brown bears has gone up in the areas where the state has kind of liberalized their regulations pretty significantly. And so the question is that okay? And I think that the Park Service has started just tentatively to dip their toe in the water of saying it's not okay. I would say the National Parks Conservation Association would say it's straight up not okay.
Do we have a preserve here in the southeast?
There is the Glacier Bay Preserve. It's very small. And most of, I don't want to drive people from Juneau away, but most of this conversation will center around the big national preserves like NOAATAC, Wrangell St. Elias, Gates of the Arctic, some of the larger spaces.
Well, those bears may not be here in our backyard, but they should be of interest to all of us anyway.
Yeah. And they're Alaskan. Yeah. So it's a terrific state resource and something that I think we should be incredibly proud of and excited to have.
Yeah. And what time does the presentation start?
It's going to start at 7:15 so that you can move on out to the university and the Egan Lecture Hall there. And it runs for an hour.
Anyone talk about some of the future presentations?
I don't have the list with me. We have, thank you, here he goes. We have Link Olson doing, he's visiting us from Fairbanks, and he's going to talk about marmots. That's the last one. Richard Karstensen is local, and he's doing wildlife and wild lands, and we've had him before talking for Wildlife Wednesday, and he's a favored person to listen to. And then the last one will be Link Olson from Fairbanks on marmots.
Yeah, Richard Karstensen is great. He's done some really impressive work on the tongas.
What else are you going to be talking about tonight?
That'll do us. I think we'll barely be able to squeeze that into an hour.
All right, anything you'd like to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
No, you know, it's going to be fun. That's what I say. This is an interesting topic. You know, it raises emotions on people. It kind of gets at the very philosophy of why we have wildlife and game in the state. So it can grind people's gears a little bit. But I think it's a really interesting topic, and I think we'll enjoy ourselves. Come on out.
And once again, that's at 7:15 tonight.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything you'd like to add, Patricia?
Nope. Just see you there at the Egan.
Okay. Thanks for coming by.
Do you enjoy folk music? Looking for something fun to do on a Wednesday night? Then tune in to Friends and Neighbors, 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7. Hi, this is Mike Sicarius, host of Friends and Neighbors. Together we'll explore and enjoy the breadth of folk music, from blues to ballads to banjos and much more. So kick back and relax this Wednesday evening with Friends and Neighbors, 7 to 9 p.m. on KRNN 102.7.
There's something new in the air. It's a little soul, it's a little jazz, and it's a little bit more. And hey, this is Nod here, and I'm here every Friday night from 9 to 11. Won't you join me for Far True Radio, and I promise you, you'll be glad you did. Friday nights at 9 p.m., KRNN-FM.